Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
You know, I'm doing my best to hate that guy.
I've tried, it doesn't work.
Not trying hard enough.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 6, Episode 19, Nancy's Choice. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Shall we discuss Nancy's Choice?
Sure.
Okay, but first, we have two other storylines to get through, so let's do that. We're starting with our C story, Love Finds the Chancellor.
Okay,
I have in my notes Claire and her sexy grimace costume because she is in a V-neck, very short, purple velour dress. It is a sexy grimace costume. I'm sorry. That's just what it is. You can see in the visual aids. Tell me I'm wrong. You won't. Anyway, they are strolling the halls with Claire's dad, noting a cute female prof that he greets. She wants him to start dating and to quit being so picky and tries to build up his confidence, but he doesn't really seem that interested in dating at all. And later, Steve is bored in a Rodeo Drive ladies' clothing store while Claire shops until he gets the idea of checking out the other patronesses. And soon, he spots a pair of sexy gams near the door. And when he turns around, she turns around, rather, it's Elle from Palm Springs. Cue the shocked reaction gif, which, as problematic as this episode is, there's nothing wrong with that gif. It's gorgeous. His face. It was like the first thing that greeted Sarah after the weekend. So in our Slack channel, so you're welcome. And then there's also a flashback to their last meeting, of course. If you have forgotten, Elle was the transsexual that Steve met in the season 5 finale in Palm Springs. Problematically, Elle recognizes him and strides over to say that it's nice to see him again. And when Claire overhears, Steve is forced to introduce them, and Steve way overcompensates with the PDA until Elle finally gracefully excuses herself. And Claire has some follow-up cues in clip 2.
Don't ask.
I'm asking.
All right, we went on a date last spring. Mm-hmm. Didn't go according to plan.
Well, she seemed to think it did.
Well, when it comes to Elle, looks can be deceiving. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
I mean,
indeed.
I think our one comment can probably suffice for this entire storyline, i.e., yeah. To wit and Viz, nope.
No. Alas, there is more. Later, Claire tells Brandon she doesn't have a dress for an upcoming event despite their day of shopping, and Steve takes off to do the dishes. Claire crabs that Steve ran into his old flame that afternoon. Brandon happens to remember Elle from Palm Springs, and Claire is irritated that whatever happened between Steve and Elle made Steve volunteer to do dishes just to escape the conversation, but Brandon tells her she has nothing to worry about in clip 3.
Elle's very, unique.
Yeah. If you're trying to reassure me, you're not doing a very good job.
Would you excuse me?
Oh, God. And then Brandon.
And this is followed by Brandon offensively jazz handsing into the kitchen. Uh-huh. There will be a gif.
Oh, good. And he flees to discuss this with Steve in a way that also hasn't aged well in clip 4.
So, how did he look?
Don't start, please. Just still tall, dark, and handsome. You didn't tell her, did you?
Tell me what? There is something going on between you and that woman, isn't there?
No way, no way. Never, never was, never will be.
Mm. They kissed, they groped.
What are you?
They had a misunderstanding.
Yeah, well, with Steve, that's par for the course, okay? There's something different about this. I want to know what.
Elle has a peaky.
What?
You guys must really think I'm stupid, huh?
Claire, Ella's a transvestite. No, there was none of that. She's full on man.
I think I know a beautiful woman when I see one, okay?
I thought so too. Don't touch me like that.
You know, if you told me the truth, I could probably deal with this. But lying to me, you're just making it worse.
That was brave. Telling her the truth.
First time, too. Won't happen again.
Attaboy.
No.
Both of you shut up.
Both forever. Claire is disappointed that Chancellor is showing up stag to this journalism banquet, which we will get to. And then out steps Elle, and the Chancellor is in love at first sight. He steps forward to introduce himself, and we find out that Elle is there because a friend of hers organized the dinner. And Steve completes the introductions, and the Chancellor asks Elle to join them. And Steve starts cracking up as Claire says that the two of them are cute together. Oh, boy. And then Elle and the Chancellor flirt, while Steve tries to warn Claire that she needs to warn her dad, but Claire still doesn't believe Steve about Elle. And when the topic turns to pregnancy, Susan runs down some of the unfortunate consequences. Elle says she thinks pregnancy is a gift. And when the Chancellor, who's fucking old enough to know better, rather rudely asks whether Elle has ever been pregnant, like, not something that you ask any woman for any reason. What? But anyway. No. Brandon and Steve eyebrow madly before Elle says that she can't have children. See, that's one of the reasons you don't ask someone that, Chancellor. And then, to prove that he's on the wrong side of history this week, Steve busts into the women's washroom and Elle is not having it in clip 5.
Ladies' room fetish. Love it.
Okay. CC the GOP. You. Thank you, Elle. Claire's coming out of a stall in time to hear Steve and Elle arguing and hides to eavesdrop on clip number 6.
I want you to leave now.
Oh, I'm disappointed, Square Arnold.
Square Arnold hasn't had a date in a decade.
Well, good. Then maybe he won't mind the equipment.
You know, female-wise, the guy's ego is in the tank. If he finds out the only woman interested in him is a man, he'll never recover.
You did.
Please, I'm begging you, don't do this.
Give me one good reason.
I'm in love with his daughter.
Spoil sport.
Okay, again, we went over this last time, but this is not ethical behavior from a trans person, and also it's none of Steve's business. Everyone is wrong, but mostly Steve, but whatever.
Well, and also, writers don't make the trans person at like the predatory gay stereotype.
Yeah,
it's fucked
exactly
up.
Yep. But when Elle's gone, Claire shows herself and thanks Steve for defending her dad with his transphobia, I guess, and to ask how far Steve got with Elle before, saying that she doesn't actually want to know and it's all problematic. And then it looks like the Chancellor is about to close the deal with Elle, but she sees Claire and Steve's glares and excuses herself, listing all her upcoming travel and making it clear they're not going to happen. And the Chancellor ends with an ego boost, so everyone wins, question mark. Moving on.
I seemed to remember, and maybe I'm confusing this with a storyline from another show. Obviously, I am. But I remembered that, like, they were like, phew, that was close, or something like that. And then it turned out that the Chancellor knew the whole time.
Oh, interesting. I guess we'll find out.
Which would have been a better story and way cooler of the Chancellor, but oh well.
For sure.
Sounds like that could be Scooby-Doo.
I'm sure it is.
Perhaps. Moving on to our B story. Cocaine is, as a wise man once said, a hell of a drug. Kelly is meeting with a prof who's noting that she's missed a ton of classes. And Kelly claims she came in late a few times and sat in the back missing attendance, not a thing in college. But this prof has had Kelly in 2 other classes before and knows that she never sat in the back. All of this is absurd, but the prof is pretty nice about it, including calling Kelly bright, which, doubtful, though she is concerned. Kelly says she's been having personal problems that may have affected her more than she thought, and the prof is sorry, but Kelly has an exam coming up. She wants Kelly to do well on it. Kelly will do her best, she says. Ron Howard, narrator, she won't. Donna has just finished cooing to Joe about their big weekend plans in Santa Barbara with her family when Kelly comes in trying to act normal, and Donna is not having it in clip 7.
Hi. So you guys are going away for the weekend, huh?
Yeah. What are you doing?
I'm sorry. You must have me confused with someone else. I'm Donna Martin, your ex-friend.
I think I'll go get the check.
I'm sorry.
I've been a real bitch. That's an understatement.
Yeah, well, I've been down, you know. Things got a little out of control.
Well, I needed you badly, Kel, and you weren't there.
I know.
Sorry. Just worried about you.
Line forms to the left.
Yeah, must be tough having people around you that care.
Donna gets to have these speeches so rarely that when she does, it's extra devastating because normally she's like the sweet simpleton sunshine child that when she actually can be like, you know what, fuck off.
Right before that. So it was nice to have her come back in the same scene.
Yep. Kelly greets all of this with an epic bitch face, which you can see in the visual aids. So Val is so horrified by Colin's descent into drug abuse that she's at his loft looking at slides in preparation for this meeting with the art collector. He says he owes her, and Val says that's why she's taking a cut. By the way, does she have any blow? Does he have any blow? She asks. He asks if she has the urge. She doesn't, but she can see that he still does. And Colin says this, clip number 8.
I'm using, not abusing.
Oh.
Hang 10, bro. Shut up.
You're from Rochester. She's all better living through chemistry. I tried that. It didn't work. And is she referring to her weed smoking? Because that's not the same. Oh, but then Kelly comes back to be a bitch about it in clip 9.
Why are you doing this? Money. That figures. Why else? Call me crazy, but I figure a career boost might let him see that he doesn't need to do drugs. Here's a little newsflash for you, Valerie. You're not his guardian angel. I told you he was using, Kelly. Instead of helping him, you decided to join the party. You can throw your life away. That's fine by me. But Colin has too much talent to throw away his.
Bah!
And then, not really.
No.
Words can't possibly describe how shitty the art is that we're about to see, which is why we have visual aids, of course. But yeah, no, making this defense on behalf of Colin's talent. And then, no. Anyway,
well, and this is the kind of thing that, like, you know, your art major friends would paint in college and then they would like gesso a bunch of Barbie parts onto it. And that was bad enough, but like, it does need the Barbie parts. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, God. Anyway, a haggard Kelly wakes up in Colin's bed after a rough night. He tries to revive her with more coke, but she's turning over a new leaf in clip number 10.
So I did a lot more than studying last night. I did some thinking. And I don't want to do coke anymore.
That's a switch. What about last week?
I binged, that's all.
No problem. That just means there's more for me.
I want you to stop, too.
Funny girl.
Well, I'm serious. It's no good.
Kelly, I'm not quitting.
How am I supposed to stop if you're always doing it?
It's called willpower.
Come on, please.
Okay.
He'll stop if you stop with that fucking baby voice.
One would hope, but
and also
she can't.
It's no good. What the hell? That phrasing is so weird.
Yeah, I don't know. So later, Colin seems sober as he meets with this collector, Val behind him in her suitiest suit to act as his agent. And as the guy goes off to look at some of his work, which is terrible, Colin apologizes to Val and says he tossed out his stash. Val tells him about his amazing gift and that he needs to take care of it. So I guess that's the story. And oh my God, the painting the guy loves is terrible shit that we used to describe as a Cosby sweater. But now since that's tainted, I will say it's an IKEA rug of a painting and hope that you understand what I'm saying. It's so fucking ugly. It's in the visual aids. You will see how right I am. Oh my God. Then Kelly runs into David at the Peach Pit when she's getting pie to go. David wants her to stay, but she has to go meet Colin. So knowing that his time is limited, David tells Kelly that Colin is bullshit. I'm paraphrasing. And she announces that they've both quit coke, and David starts challenging her bravado in clip 11.
So when was the last time you thought about cocaine?
What do you mean?
You know exactly what I mean. When was the last time you thought about doing a line?
This morning. But I didn't do it.
Hell, it's called white knuckle sobriety. Eventually, you're not gonna be able to take it anymore, and you're gonna let go.
You're wrong about that.
Whatever you say.
In other words, no, you are full of it also. And then Val is giving Colin 10,000 reasons to stay clean and a pep talk in clip 12.
What are you talking about?
Don't you see? Sterling Pendon just happened to walk into the After Dark. He came as a sign.
I know, manna from heaven.
Exactly. I mean, just when you were about to blow your talent up your nose, he came as a reminder not to.
Nice try, Val, but I'm afraid you have it all backwards.
Well, I don't see how. I mean, he bought your paintings, right?
He bought two of my paintings. Each one, I painted high.
So?
So, come on, Val, all that stuff about new techniques, new insights. How the hell do you think that all happened?
Well, it's like you said. I mean, you grew into your talent.
You're damn right I did. With a little help from my friends.
You're finished, right? I mean, you told me you threw away your stash.
Like an idiot, I threw away my stash. Thanks to you and thanks to this check, I can afford to correct that mistake.
Colin, you don't need coke to paint.
No. I only need it to paint well.
That remains to be seen. His art is so bad. Moving on, Kelly shows up at Colin's where he's made an elaborate meal to celebrate his great news in clip 13.
I sold two paintings today.
You did? Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Oh.
You will not believe for how much.
$5,000.
Nuh-uh, $10,000.
You're right, I don't believe that.
Wow, that is a real hilarious nag.
Yeah, from someone who's supposed to believe in your talent.
Yeah.
Not good.
And frankly, $5,000 for two paintings would have been a lot also. But anyway, Colin takes off and she assumes he's getting cocaine, but it's champagne. Later, David is giving Val a back rub and telling her to quit being so hard on herself for being unable to solve Colin's drug problem. And he takes his shirt off and he looks so different from every other time we've seen him with a shirt off that they have to give Val a line about, have you been working out, so that we understand that people in the show's universe know that he is no longer the tiny scrawn that he used to be. After dinner, Colin and Kelly fool around. She is drunk and horny for coke in clip 14.
You know what would taste so good right now?
I do.
Bet we can't.
Oh, said we wouldn't. Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing you threw out our stash. You did throw it out, didn't you?
Of course I did. Most of it.
Oh, you're a bad boy.
Oh, I feel terrible, too. Am I forgiven?
Mm-mm. Never.
What?
Nothing.
Come on, what?
Nothing. What do you want to do?
Same thing as you.
And what are we waiting for? Get it.
And then a man starts making guacamole next to the bed. What is with that music?
I don't know. What is it replacing? I would like to know. Anyway, yes. That's enough. We get it. Olay. They're doing coke.
Olay.
So bad.
You're from Rochester.
He is. Anyway.
Oh my God. Although that does sort of correspond with everyone's like Gypsy Kings period, but still.
Still. No. We do still have an ace plot to get to, but first.
First, Robin would like to wish one of her besties from high school, Libby, a happy 35th birthday on April 15th. Mm. Text day baby Libby introduced Robin to Again With This, and they both agree, looking back on the show, that, quote, Steve Sanders was the real catch.
Well, not so much in this episode, but on the whole, sure. So in honor of Libby's natal day, we present five legendary plot lines Steve would have markedly improved had they centered on him. Number one, instead of dropping all the lab animals on the floor like Maroon, Steve fills his jorts with kittens and then must awkwardly speed amble away from the feds while his pants are meowing.
Who hasn't? Number two, when Barb defaces his car at a euphoria-riddled rave, Steve has a toad into his room at the keg house and turns it into an aquarium.
Number three, while awkwardly twirling the gun Rush keeps in his desk, Steve accidentally fires it up through the ceiling into Spencer's room, killing Brandon mid-makeout.
Number four, menaced by Ray, Steve pushes him down the stairs, then drop kicks his guitar into the upper branches of a palm tree for good measure.
Number five, what better way to memorialize Jack McKay's giant pants than by turning them into a bouncy castle with beer taps?
from the pride of New Jersey's two relevant Arieses, Ian Ziering and Bunsey. And the rest of us here at Again With This.
Happy birthday, Libby!
All right, now for our A-plot god, strap in. Susan has a secret. So as we open in the good old student union, Brandon and Susan are engaging in some extraordinarily artless exposition in clip 15.
So have you written your acceptance speech yet?
No, because I am not going to win.
Humility, nice touch, Keats. But I read that piece you wrote about abortion, Nancy's Choice.
Unfortunately, it is far too credible. Thousands of girls like Nancy have unwanted pregnancies every year.
She's the only one I know who had her story told by a brilliant writer.
Thank you.
I'm serious. The Collegiate Press Club Award is as good as on your mantle.
Okay.
The Convincingly Acting Exposition Award will be going to someone else, Mr. Priestley. Have a seat. I am seated.
That was so...
Thanks, yeah, Dave.
That was bad. That was all very 80-yard sounding, too. I mean, I know they're in the studio.
Oh, you know, we didn't follow up on that because everybody was sending us pictures and stuff after the height thing from last time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. What do you mean, oh, yeah?
Oh, right. We were talking about it for Extra Hot Grade. I forgot. Yes, that we discussed it yesterday. That's why I forgot that we didn't talk about it on this podcast.
Oh, I see. Gotcha.
At the last record. Yes.
Somebody sent a photo of them at a convention getting his signature. She said, I am 5'6". And I was wearing flats, and
they are the same height.
Yeah. So I guess then by that, assuming that is true, that we are in fact the same height.
Yes, but someone else had something that was like some internet source that she apparently tweeted at him that it said he was 5'0", which is probably not accurate.
It would be funny.
But you know what? Who's to say?
If I am not serious. Please don't do this. But if a whole bunch of people in sequence kept on asking him if he was like X height, but every time they asked, he got an inch shorter. Is it true you're 5'6", 5'5"? It gets down to like 3'8". Like... Anyways, that was a little bit of follow-up.
May we move on, or do you have more, Sarah?
I am prepared to move on, I guess.
I mean, we'll never move on from him. There actually is... Well, anyway, we'll save it. If she doesn't get him a speech, he says he will write it for her. And by the way, Susan is in such a Dorothy's Bornak top in this scene. It's like a collarless, like muddy green brown floral print. It looks like a couch at the Golden Girls house. It's hideous. You can see in the visual aids. When they get to the Condor office, everyone's still hanging around after getting their assignments because Jonathan is sitting on Susan's desk holding court and getting ready to cuck Brandon some more in clip 16.
Susan, you should be proud of me. I press my suit and spit shine my dress shoes.
What's the occasion?
Jonathan's coming to the awards dinner tomorrow night.
Cool. I got a column to write. Excuse me.
You knew he'd come?
Sure, to hang out, maybe to write a story, but not to be your date.
You're my date.
Right, that's why Jonathan got his suit pressed and his shoes shined.
Jonathan was editor of the paper when I wrote the story about Nancy. I didn't invite him, the committee did.
Hey, it's not your professional relationship I'm concerned with.
Come on, we've been over this.
Yes, we have. You keep telling me it's over, and it's not. So, have a nice day.
It's going to come up again, but have a nice day is Brandon for fuck you, and it's not very subtle either. He's
no,
terrible.
It's really not. And if this is that much of a problem for you, dump her.
Yeah.
Also, Susan, stop chasing after him to justify your relationship with Jonathan and stop having a relationship with Jonathan.
Well,
both of you,
honestly,
eat bees.
Seriously. But yes, like the idea of this Brandon attitude of like she was formed fully when he laid eyes on her first is really stupid and unfair and awful and Brandon-y, as we should expect in the good old student union. Susan and Jonathan discuss this award she's up for and what it could do for her career. She wins. She's all shy and lame about it before making the conversation personal in clip 17.
Why did you show up for this, Jonathan?
I was invited.
Jonathan.
I came here to cheer you on to victory, Suze. After all, who else knows how much you sacrificed for this story?
Right.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. I didn't.
Column's on your desk.
Brandon, please wait. You should go.
Yeah.
All of you fuck off. So tiresome.
Seriously. First of all, your career. Give me a fucking break.
Yeah, honestly. But yes, like coming here to tell me that it's on my desk. I'll see it when I get it to my desk. Like being such a pisshead, but whatever. Once Jonathan is gone, Brandon tries to sidle off like a baby and makes Susan beg him to stay again so that she can talk to him again in clip 18.
Please.
Fine. I'm listening.
Gee, thanks, cock.
Jonathan is pro-life. He didn't want me to tell Nancy's story.
So?
So he thinks what she did was wrong. He also thinks I infringed on her privacy.
Did you?
Well, sort of. I mean, I did talk her into letting me do the story.
And how does she feel about it now?
I think it helped her heal.
That's more important than what Jonathan thinks.
Jonathan was my mentor. A lot of the way I think and the way I work came from our relationship. His disapproval was very difficult for me.
Is it still?
God, just that tone. I don't understand why she doesn't think she can do better when she has demonstrable proof, mm-hmm. a foot taller than Brandon, that she can.
Well, he's also got issues as well.
Clearly.
Yeah, maybe she should just give up on men. It's always an option. Brandon is the worst, but he is also a strategic thinker and enlists Claire and Steve to come with him to this event and laugh at all his jokes and basically help him cuck Jonathan for a change. Good luck. The next day, Brandon and Susan have professional differences that he handles in an extremely professional way. Just kidding. Clip 19.
What's my column?
What's the big deal? I'll run it tomorrow.
It was supposed to run today.
I think it needs some more reporting.
Oh, really? Do tell.
Well, I think it needs a second source. And a quote from someone nonpartisan would be nice. What? I'm just doing my job.
Well, if you'll excuse me, I have some reporting to do. Good luck at the awards.
Brandon, I need you there tonight.
No, you don't. You have Jonathan. Have a nice day.
Oh, there it is again. Fuck you, too.
Where's McCullum? Fuck you. You're not the editor-in-chief.
Where's your column? I don't know. Did you check up your ass? Because it might be there.
Don't be such a squeef.
Oh my god.
We're past squeeze.
He is such a cunt, I can't even.
Wow. And then Brandon is half sticking to his threat by going to the peach pit while the banquet is on, but dressed up for the banquet in case he decides to have a last minute attack of heroism. Brandon doesn't get why, if the article is why Susan and Jonathan broke up, Jonathan would return to see it honored, but after some boring blah with Nat, he decides to grace everyone with his presence after all. And when he shows up, Susan rewards him by being happy and kissing him and basically doing everything wrong. And Jonathan seethes, and who can blame him? And when Susan's category is about to come up, everyone at her table has a stupid conversation about her subject, starting in clip 20.
Forgive me for asking, but what did you write about?
A woman's right to choose.
Did you ever wonder why men never have the right to choose?
I don't know, Steve. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that men don't have a uterus or ovaries.
As much as I can like Steve on occasion, this is the last subject on which I want to hear him expounding, frankly.
Yeah, no.
No, but like a really stupid conversation. Clip 21.
Personally, I don't think that men or women should have the right to choose.
You don't believe in abortion?
No. No, I don't.
Actually, that's why Susan said you guys broke up. You didn't want her to write the Nancy story.
Really? Is that what she told you?
Yes, it is. Would you care to elaborate?
At the table? No!
Yeah. As the nominees are read out, the Chancellor classily toasts Susan, and then she wins. Brandon badly smushes her face as he kisses her, which you can see in the visual aids. And when she stands up to go receive the award, Jonathan has the manners to also stand and hug her, leaving Brandon looking like an ass. And this is in the visual aids with the file name, "That's why you get up, idiot." .gif. Anyway, speech.
He is standing up.
Thank you. Clip 22.
Thank you very much. You don't know how much this means to me. I'd like to accept this award on behalf of all the women who every day have to face this very difficult and very personal decision. Women who, regardless of the choice they make, have to live the rest of their life with the consequence of their action. If Nancy were here tonight, I can say she might not regret her choice to have an abortion. The effects are that profound and the consequences are that lasting. That's why winning this award is very special. It honors more than choice. It also honors courage. Thank you.
Okay. Nancy sounds like she really went through the ringer. And of course, there's more to it, which can only come out to stop Brandon bloviating about shit he doesn't understand in clip 23.
It's perfect.
You think?
Yeah. You honored the people who deserved it. Like you said, they're the courageous ones.
I don't know. Nancy's not even her real name. And if she's so brave, why did she insist on using a pseudonym?
You said it yourself. She wants her privacy.
She does.
Still, I think she'd like to know about the award. You should call her and tell her.
Well, that shouldn't be too difficult. I'm Nancy.
What?
What?
Story. It's mine.
You had an abortion?
No, she had car
last
trouble, Stumad.
John. How'd that happen?
You mean how could we have been so irresponsible?
Yeah.
Fuck you!
Wow, that genuinely startled me.
Like, you're in your 20s. You know how contraception works, which is not 100% of the time.
I just, yeah, you dated a teenage mom, bonehead.
Yes.
A. Mm-hmm. B, fuck you. C, fuck you. D through M, fuck you.
And your best friend from high school got pregnant by accident also.
And, I understand that they had to make Susan, like, riven by regret because it was Fox primetime in the 90s. And that's how you had to do it. No one could just have an abortion and get on with their lives in any kind of functional, thoughtful way. So I get it, but it's just maddening to watch her and to see her just like fucking begging for Brandon's approval of a life decision she made for herself before they ever met. Fuck that.
This is also like the second time in, you know, a few seasons where the guy who's accidentally gotten the woman pregnant has been very opposed to abortion, which, like, I feel like at this stage in history, that would not have been the case for a guy in his early 20s, that if a woman came to him and was like, I'm not having this baby, he'd be like, great. Statistically.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there was one situation in college. I am not Nancying this. This was not me. But it was sort of like after the fact, the guy really, really struggled with it because he was quite observant. And
I see.
It did end up being... It did end up fracturing the relationship, but it's, you know, it's not like they'd be married now. And
right,
the way that this show accidentally sometimes broken clocks a storyline like that is still, yeah, like everything surrounding the rest of that story is garbage.
Right. And of course, like, if both of them were on the same side of the decision, there wouldn't be a story. Like, not the story that she just won an award for, but like a story in the episode. So I get it. But I also think, like, this seems statistically unlikely that of this sample, it would be 100% anti-choice on the dude side, but whatever.
Yeah. I don't know that the show always finds a way to like scold women.
Of course.
For fucking, even though at this point in the show's life cycle, that's like the only plot there is.
True.
Fucking or not fucking.
Anyway, back to the scene. Instead of telling Brandon to fuck off, as she should, Susan tells him that her sister had just been killed and she was lost. And then, oh my God, clip 24.
You know what? I don't have the right to ask you that question. You don't owe me an explanation.
Holy shit! Insight from Brandon. I actually could not believe it when the scene took this turn. I really was shocked.
Yeah. You could almost see the mini strokes cascading down his face. It's really interesting.
He's right. But Susan says that she does owe him an explanation. She doesn't. But she says that she was, in fact, drunk when she and Jonathan boned that time. And so was Jonathan. And guess what? He was also gross. Here's what he said when he found out she was pregnant. Clip 25.
Let me see if I can remember his exact words. Oh, yeah. He said, "Will you marry me?"
All right, gross is an overstatement, but I still feel like that was an emotionally blackmailing moment if they ended up breaking up instead.
Yeah, not to mention, as you mentioned before, completely out of character for Jonathan as, you know, as written to date. He's like the whatever jet setting star cub reporter. So,
yeah, the Men's Journal Club Med rating guy suddenly wanted to marry her. I don't buy it, but whatever. After the commercials, Susan confirms that it doesn't change anything for her and Brandon that she is Nancy. But since Jonathan is the villain, Brandon gets to say the right thing, which is that it doesn't change a thing. They are fine. And they're kissing on it when Jonathan rolls up, when he's cleared off Brandon, commenting, as we heard up top, that he's trying but failing to hate Brandon. The conversation goes on in clip 26.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to hate you, too.
Good for you.
Is that why you came here tonight, Jonathan? To remind me?
I came back because we never talked about it. You made your choice and that was it.
It's not true.
Are you saying I could have changed your mind?
No. I wasn't going to change my life because of an accident.
Oh, that's a great way to talk about a child.
God. Spare me the sanctimonious crap, Jonathan. You were pro-choice until you realized you didn't have one.
That's a low blow.
It was supposed to be.
Don't be.
You know, I didn't think that I could forgive you. But I was wrong.
About what exactly? I would like to know which part that you suddenly turned on her politically when it actually affected her directly and also yourself. Like, I wish that they had dug into exactly what he thinks he was wrong about and everything that went down between them.
Yeah. Also, it's not for you. I think he thinks that he thought he couldn't forgive her and that's what he was wrong about. But why are you changing your mind when you just got yelled at? A and B, it's not for you to forgive.
Right.
Go on your way.
Yep. Anyway, they don't. Things wind down with compliments from him for her imminent journalistic stardom. And when Susan meets back up with Brandon in the lobby of the hotel, he tells her that doubting her decision doesn't mean it was the wrong one, which is very astute and correct. But she is not so sure in our final clip.
You forgave me.
That was important to you, huh?
And if I can only forgive myself.
Anything I can do?
Kill yourself?
That was just hold me. Oh, whatever.
I hate that phrasing so much. Only on TV.
Yep.
just hold me.
Yeah, barf. Well, that's the end. So let's wrap it up with our most valuable player. Nancy, who actually is the hero of the story, aka Susan. That was obviously an extremely tough thing, and she made the choice that in retrospect everyone can certainly agree was the right one to have made.
David?
Because he was working out and now he has arms.
Sure.
Could be Donna. She told off Kelly to her face.
I guess, but there was that right before that, and also it's Donna. So I'm going to go with David.
Okay,
he looked pretty good.
Least valuable player. Brandon.
Yeah, solid Brandon.
I mean, he comes back from it, but he really has to get it down very low in the valley of shittiness before he can like claw his way up to like acceptable member of society.
True. Walk through the valley of shittiness. I shall not fear the brave.
All right. Let us do a user submission to close things out. This one is very apropos given the L plot line from Alone Together 2 on Twitter. 5 things that happened in the episode that would not have gone over well in today's society.
Oh, God.
Number one, referring to L by male pronouns.
Number two, using the word transvestite.
Yeah, good one. Number three, as Sarah already said, predatory gay stereotype of a trans person being unethical and pursuing someone that she, as far as she knows, is a straight person.
I hope, number four, using vaguely Mexican / South American inflected music to underline a scene in which people fall off the wagon and do cocaine.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And number five, I have to say, I don't. What is that? Oh, okay.
Vaguely Mexican.
It's just game show music. I don't think it's that Mexican-y. Number five, I am not sure that there are that many college newspapers that would let a journalist publish an essay like what we've heard about the Nancy story, because I feel like in some ways there's even more of a chill on abortion coverage than there was then. So that's my fifth, sadly.
Yeah, I think that's right.
All right, that makes five.
Oh, I thought it was going to be the Gypsy Cogs. Anyway, next time on Again With This, Kelly's a junkie and won't get help. Joe's got a bum ticker and ditto, and Ginger's back to ruin everything for Val. Our visual aids for this and every other Again With This episode will ruin everything for your corneas. You can find those if you dare at our website at previously.tv. You can follow our website on Twitter at previouslytv, and you can follow this podcast at AWT90210. I'm Braymore Hirsch, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. Here with my co-host, Buzzkill Bissinger. She's Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Christopher Bitchens, David T. Cole. He's on Twitter at Clark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.